current U.S. foreign policy decision or policies would you like to see changed?
I would not like to see us ever put a withdrawal date on a decision to send American troops into harm's way, because I think that telegraphs to the enemy what you're likely to do, and it tends to undermine morale. Yes, sir.
Question, I think, what, 20 years ago you were involved in Mideast negotiations
yeah.
with Israel
yeah.
and Palestine?
Yeah.
As I read in the paper, the issues are a lot the same, settlements, security. I think in your book you said Kissinger kind of warned you about the pitfalls that
yeah.
on that.
Yeah.
The question is, what items are changing? I think the resolutions in 4-2 is still relevant to the
yeah. Yeah. Let me say, having said something critical of the current administration here, I want to say something supportive of it over here. I think it's terrific that President Obama has seen fit to take on the Arab-Israeli conflict in his first term. Too many presidents postpone that until later in their presidency because of the domestic political aspects of that issue. 242 and 338 are the only basis, UN resolutions 242 and 338, the only real basis for peace between Arabs and Israelis. And of course, they call for negotiation of land for peace. And they have worked in the past. One of the things I spent a lot of time on was trying for the first time ever to bring Arabs and Israelis together at the negotiating table to meet face to face to talk peace. And we were successful in accomplishing that at the Madrid Peace Conference. The underpinnings of the Madrid Peace Conference were those two resolutions. You talk to people who are knowledgeable about this issue, and most everybody will tell you those have to be those. Land for peace has to be the basis on which we try to pursue peace between Arabs and Israelis. That's a short answer. I could go on and on and on in that area, as you know. Yes, sir.
Sir, are you concerned by the amount of discord within the Obama administration that was portrayed in Woodward's book leading up to the...
No, I'm not concerned about it because it happens in every administration. This is an issue that's an extraordinarily difficult one for a Democratic president. There are large elements within that party who don't want to see us undertake any kind of military action. And so I'm not surprised that you have that. I've written two books. The first book I wrote, shortly after I got out of office. It was about my 4 years as Secretary of State. It's called The Politics of Diplomacy. And I wrote the book in order to set the record straight so the revisionists couldn't come in and say, here's what happened, here's what didn't happen. And I wrote it from the very MEMCONs, Memorandums of Conversation, that I had with foreign leaders. Anytime you see a quote in the book, it's what people actually said. And one of the things I said in this book is that I think the George H.W. Bush administration was the exception to the rule when it came to formulating and implementing foreign policy. We didn't backbite, we didn't fight with each other. We had an administration, a national security apparatus that worked the way it should work. And we were the exception to the rule, and I'm not criticizing just Democratic administrations. Republican administrations have had problems in this area as well. So I'm not surprised about it. Yes, sir.
How have your holdings in the Carlyle Group affected your role as Middle East Special Envoy?
I'm not a Middle East Special Envoy, so it hadn't affected it. It hadn't affected my role. I'm out of the Carlyle Group. I'm no longer a partner in the Carlyle
Group. You're not still invested in the Carlyle Group?
Hmm?
You are not still invested in the Carlyle Group?
No, I'm not a partner in the Carlyle Group. I invest with them, just like other people do, put my money up and hope that they make me money, and for the most part, they do. Yes.
As someone who's been involved with U.S.-Iraqi relations since the Gulf War, I would like to hear your perspective on the end of combat operations there.
The end of combat operations? Well, if you attend the lecture, you'll hear me say that we should all welcome the end of combat operations in Iraq. But we need to recognize the fact we still have 50,000 American troops there. And the jury is still somewhat out on whether or not Iraq is going to end up as a force for stability in the Middle East, a democratic country in the heart of the Middle East that will be an ally of the United States in the war on terror. We still don't know whether that's going to happen. But the end of combat operations, everybody has to be pleased that that's happened. But we still have 50,000 troops there, and some of them are still being wounded and killed. Yes, sir.
On Iraq, what role do you think the United States should have in helping Iraq form a government?
I think the role that the United States is currently pursuing as far as assisting Iraq to form a government is the right one. We need to encourage them to do so. We need to try and cajole, encourage, and support them in trying to arrive at a unity government in Iraq.
What are your opinions on how we're approaching Iran, and what do you think they should do?
I think we're doing the right, I think we have the right approach with respect to Iran. And the reason I say that is that there is no easy, in my view, easy military solution to that problem. I think that sanctions have been tightened. I'm reluctant to say substantially, but somewhat, and they may be beginning to bite. And so I think that's the right policy approach to follow. I also happen to be one who's always believed in talking to your enemies. I don't think you get very far by saying you're not going to talk to a country just because you don't like its government or because it's an adversary. So I don't have a problem with doing that. Having said all of that to you, I want to make the point that Iran is a force for instability in that region of the world, and we should continue to oppose their nuclear processing arrangements, because we have pretty good intelligence that they're trying to build a weapon. Now, we can't prove that beyond a shadow of a doubt, but most everybody in the world thinks they are, and we're now at the point of getting the United Nations Security Council to vote some fairly good sanctions against Iran. Interesting to me to see President Ahmadinejad come to New York today for the General Assembly and say he wants to resume the dialogue with the United States and other permanent five members, or well, other Security Council members.
What do you think about the current president's view on terrorism?
Well, I don't think anybody has a different view on terrorism. Any American has any different view on terrorism than any other. We're against it because we suffer from it, and we need to fight it, and we need to be vigilant in opposing terrorism. You're not suggesting with the question that there's any support for terrorism, I know, in the administration.
Do you think multilateral talks are the best way to keep North Korea from any nuclear weapons?
The North Korean issue is there's a similar problem there. There is no easy military answer to that, because they've got over a million troops right there on the border with South Korea, and any effort we might make militarily, they could successfully set Seoul, Korea on fire. I mean, it would be a terrible conflagration. So I think trying to work with the six-party talks and trying to convince China that North Korea is a force for instability on the Korean Peninsula, and that we ought not to have a nuclear North Korea on the Korean Peninsula, is the way to go. That's the way this administration is going. That's the way the George W. Bush administration was going. That's the way the George H.W. Bush administration went. That's the way the Clinton administration went. I think it's the right approach.
Missouri just sent, I think, its fourth incarnation of the National Guard agribusiness development team to Afghanistan. What do you think about those types of efforts? They're going there and teaching Afghanis.
I think anything we can do by way of civil reconstruction, civil development, developmental project, I think you've got to have a muscular civil slash political approach and not just a military approach. Because if you're going to go into a country like that, you got to, and you're going to do counterinsurgency as opposed to just counterterrorism, you've got to find a way to somehow improve the life of the average citizen in that country and win their hearts and minds. So I think that's the appropriate approach. The reason we turned things around in Iraq is because we followed that approach in Iraq, General Petraeus, and now he's in a position to implement the same kind of a policy in Afghanistan.
Is the U.S. winning the war in Afghanistan right now?
I have no idea. I'm not privy to the intelligence. I wouldn't presume to answer that. Yes?
Why do you think President Obama rejected the invitation from Ahmadinejad to have a direct talk with him, even though Obama himself is encouraging the talk between the Palestinians and the Israelis?
Why do I think Obama's doing what with Ahmadinejad?
Why do you think Obama rejected the invitation from Ahmadinejad to have a direct talk with him?
Well, because that's just game showmanship. That's all that is. We got plenty of dialogue going in the context of the United Nations Security Council, and it is advantageous to the United States to have a dialogue where the rest of the world, if you will, is opposed to Iran's efforts to acquire a nuclear weapon. And that's the way it ought to be.
Secretary Baker has time for one more question.
Did you once accept $1 million from Enron in 1995 to make a phone call to India?
No, I didn't.